I just wanted to comment, and I'll probably do this again and again over the 2 days, that not only do we anticipate that you'll submit these for publication, but they also, your presentation skills are just amazing, better than most senior people I hear at congresses. And I would encourage you, I haven't seen the deadline yet, but I would encourage you to think about presenting these at the next CPA Congress, which is going to be in Ottawa, which I realize is a fair trek, but there is some money available through the university for presenting, and hopefully your employer would also provide some funding, especially if it's a presentation that's accepted. So think about that as well. Keeping on in our, boy, we have a lot of musculoskeletal papers. Keeping on in that theme, everybody's favorite theme, the next topic is a systematic review of the effectiveness of eccentric strength training in preventing hamstring strains in healthy individuals. And this group was actually initially supervised by Dr. Donna McIntyre, who's here, and who then wisely went on sabbatical, although I think they've done just fine, and then was supervised by Dr. Darlene Redenbach, who unfortunately couldn't be here today. But so now we're going to hear from Amanda, Christina, Andrew, Osita, and Trevor. Did I get it right? All right, okay.
All right, so as Susan mentioned, our topic is eccentric strength training effective in the prevention of hamstring strains in otherwise healthy individuals? So just a little outline, we'll go through the introduction and the rationale for our systematic review, and then Trevor will come up and talk about the methods that we use to conduct our research. Andrew and Amanda will talk about the results of our search, and then Osita will get into some discussion about our results, and she'll have a look at limitations and some future directions for research before we conclude our presentation. So, hamstring strains are the primary soft tissue injury in recreation and sports. They account for approximately 29% of injuries in sprinting and 16 to 23% of injuries in Australian rules football. They typically result from activities such as sprinting, jumping, and kicking. A recent review indicated that hamstring injuries have the highest recurrence rates in sports, ranging from 12 to 31%. So this is obviously concerning. They're a primary concern because they have a very high recurrence rate that we previously mentioned on the last slide. And secondly, they result in an acute loss of functional performance. Third, hamstring strains are associated with prolonged periods of recovery. So as we know, the hamstrings are composed of three muscles that form a triad in the posterior compartment of the thigh. They have a biarticular arrangement, meaning that these muscles cross both the knee and the hip joint at the same time. So the most common site of strain is at the musculotendinous junction of the biceps femoris muscle. So there are some risk factors that we've identified in our preliminary searches for hamstring strains. First, the intrinsic risk factors. They include an older age, sex, and ethnicity. As well, previous injury and lumbopelvic instability have also been noted. Finally, decreased hamstring flexibility or strength, or agonist-antagonist muscle imbalance can also contribute to strains. Extrinsic factors include fatigue, lack of warm-up, and inadequate preseason training. Our research has found that the most significant predictor of hamstring strain is the previous injury, so we obviously need to focus on some primary prevention of these injuries. It is also important for us to focus on hamstring strength because muscle strengthening has a protective effect on the occurrence of hamstring strains. So a rapid phase change of muscle contraction from eccentric to concentric has been suggested as the underlying mechanism for hamstring strains. It is during this phase change that the hamstrings are maximally loaded and lengthened. So for example, during gait, there's an eccentric contraction in late swing. At heel strike, the concentric contraction begins. So eccentric is the active lengthening of the muscle fibers, with the force being proportional to the speed of muscle contraction. While concentric contraction refers to the active shortening of muscle fibers, with the force being inversely related to the speed of contraction. Now, muscle adaptation is mode specific. So subsequent bouts of eccentric training will increase eccentric strength by shifting the length tension curve to the right, as seen by the dotted line on the slide. This means that peak tension can be generated at longer muscle lengths. This results in a protective effect against exercise-induced damage. So what changes actually occur in the muscle? It has been proposed that sarcomeres, the contractile unit of muscle fibers, are added in series following eccentric loading. Given that muscle damage in hamstring strains occurs near end range, this structural adaptation optimizes the angle of peak torque and reduces the risk for potential injury. So preliminary research demonstrated a lack of consensus with regards to the appropriate management of hamstring strains. Currently, the role of eccentric exercise in preventing primary, otherwise known as first-time, strains and secondary or recurrent hamstring strains has not been clearly defined. Since hamstring strains are so common, it is important for us to identify valid and reliable prevention strategies to reduce the incidence and to direct rehabilitation efforts when hamstring strains do occur. Therefore, we developed our research question as follows. Is eccentric strength training effective in the prevention of hamstring strains in otherwise healthy individuals? So now Trevor will come on and talk about the methods.
So we searched a number of electronic databases, including Medline, PubMed, Embase, and the others listed above. We also searched Cochrane's database of systematic reviews to ensure that there were currently no other reviews on our topic. Databases were searched from the earliest dates available up to March 2007. Our search was limited to the articles in English and in French. In addition to the databases listed previously, a number of sources were hand-searched. These included the reference lists of all full-text articles included in the systematic review and any literature published by leading authors in the field of this research, so researchers such as Brockett, Prosky, and Coisier. Relevant academic journals were hand-searched by the team. These included journals such as the American Journal of Sports Medicine and the Scandinavian Journal of Medicine, Science, and Sports. Gray literature sources included CIRI, Database of International Rehab Research, NERIC's Rehab Data Literature Databases, and the Critically Appraised Topics, or CATS. A number of keywords and mesh terms were identified to search the databases. To identify studies with muscle strains, the following search terms were used: athletic injuries, sprains or strains, or leg injuries. The term hamstrings was further defined by three individual muscles that compose the hamstring group, being semimembranosus, semitendinosus, and biceps femoris. Eccentric was also used as a search term. For all databases, search terms had to be individually tailored to the specific database we used. We chose to outline our inclusion criteria using the PICO format, which stands for population, intervention, comparison, and outcome. Our population in the study included individuals who may or may not have suffered a previous hamstring strain, but were otherwise free of any other injuries. These included adults 18 to 65 years of age. For the intervention, at least some or all of the participants had undergone some form of eccentric strength training. And if appropriate, comparisons were made between the eccentric group and those receiving alternate interventions. The primary outcome of interest was the incidence of initial hamstring strain or a subsequent recurrent hamstring strain. A list of citations was created from the database searches, and citations to be included in the review were determined based on the inclusion criteria above. Following the screening of the citations and abstracts, full text articles were retrieved and evaluated independently by two reviewers. When reviewers reached a consensus on whether to accept or decline the article, a accepted article was then screened using a custom article screening form, and this was also used for data extraction of those articles. If the reviewers were unable to reach a consensus, a third reviewer was brought in to make the final decision on that article. Two quality assessment scales were used in our review to measure the methodological rigor of the included studies. The Physiotherapy Evidence Database, or PEDRO scale, and the Oxford Levels of Evidence-Based Medicine Levels of Evidence. These measures were chosen for their high level of validity and their reliability. PEDRO scale is scored out of 10 with a score greater than 6, indicating a strong level of evidence. Oxford Levels of Evidence are scored from 1 to 4, one indicating a very high quality study, such as an RCT. Again, two independent reviewers assessed the quality of the included full text articles. Our average kappa value for inter-rater reliability for the PEDRO scale was 0.89, and average kappa value for reliability for Oxford was 1.0. A summary of our search results are presented in the following flowchart. Following a search of the electronic databases using our keywords and mesh terms, 508 citations were identified. Duplicates were removed, leaving 354 primary articles for potential inclusion. Of these, 259 were excluded based on our citation screening criteria, leaving the remaining 95 articles or titles. Abstracts were obtained for the remaining 95 citations. From these, 74 were excluded, leaving 21 full text articles for screening. Reasons for exclusion of the 21 full text articles, or sorry, the 21 full text articles were screened using a custom article screening form, and 16 were excluded. Studies were excluded for a variety of reasons. Four of the studies did not specify a specific eccentric intervention. Four of the studies failed to report hamstring strain incidents. And eight of the studies were review articles discussing their research on eccentric exercise and hamstring strains. In total, five full-text articles were identified for inclusion from the electronic database search. Following hand searching, an additional two articles were identified and determined to be appropriate for our systematic review. This resulted in a grand total of 7 studies to be included. The next section is results, and that will be presented by Andrew.
So what we'll do now is we'll go through the 7 studies that we included. I'll start with one section, and Amanda will carry over into another section of the included studies. So as Trevor mentioned, we had 7 included studies with their PEDRA scores ranging from 2 to 7 and their Oxford scores ranging from 2B to 4. This suggested, just as a cursory look, that the evidence was fairly weak. And what we did is, in an attempt to group the studies, we found that we could group them by their type of intervention. So there were 3 studies that looked at hamstring lowers, 2 at isokinetic strengthening, and then we classified the other ones as other because there was no other way to group them. And 3 of our 7 included studies were RCTs, the other 4 were prospective cohort studies. So I'm going to discuss the hamstring lower section here. What you can see in the picture is the hamstring lowers protocol. Basically, it was the same among the 3 articles. The only variation would be that in one of the articles, they had a board that strapped the participants' ankles in. So what happens is that this is the starting position with the assistant holding onto their ankles. They lower themselves into this position, trying to control their fall into that position, thereby loading the hamstrings eccentrically. This is commonly called hamstring lowers, often called Nordic hamstring lowers or Russian hamstring lowers as well. So the first study that looked at hamstring lowers that we found was published in 2007. It was Oxford level 4, so fairly low, and the PEDRA score was also 2. They did primary and secondary prevention mainly because their population was elite male soccer players in Norway and Iceland. They were the elite leagues that they used. So there were 17 teams with the number of players varying from about 18 to 24. So these guys' intervention looked at, their goal in the study was to examine the effect of flexibility training as well as eccentric training. So we pulled the eccentric part, but we'll discuss vaguely the flexibility part, although there was minimal effect. The warm-up stretching in this study was just a single person PNF stretching, and the flexibility in the study was a partner-assisted PNF stretch, so they were quite similar. The warm-up stretching and the B component here, the reason we've broken this down this way is because the description of the study was pretty complicated, and the next slide we'll go into it a little bit more detail. But the next group was the warm-up stretching combined with hamstring lowers, and warm-up stretching, flexibility, and hamstring lowers in the third group. And controls were teams that didn't have any intervention during the seasons. So this was adapted from the original study to show how they broke the interventions down. The 99 and 2000 seasons here were used as baseline measures to see how many strains were incurred prior to any intervention. They were done, as you can see here, in Iceland in 99 and Iceland and Norway in 2000. And then in 2001, the warm-up stretching, flexibility, and hamstring lowers was done in Iceland, whereas the warm-up stretching and flexibility was done in Norway in 2001. And 2000B, they did in Iceland and Norway the warm-up stretching and hamstring lowers. Next here. So the outcomes that they looked at were incidence, which they defined as the number of hamstring strains incurred per 1,000 player hours. So that included training as well as games. And severity, we included severity because we found that a couple of the studies looked at severity, so we weren't sure whether or not that would be something that would tease out any effect. And we'll talk about that later, but it didn't appear to do anything. And their definition for severity was just duration of absence from play. What they found was that the hamstring lowers group was at a decreased risk, or they had a fewer and lower incidence of hamstring strains compared to baseline among all the interventions, and that there were fewer hamstring lowers, 65% less compared to the controls, so the teams that didn't have any intervention. One of the things they noted in this study was that there was no significant dropout rate in this study with regard to DOMS. Most of the teams adhered to the protocol, with one team not adhering to the protocol, they did a more aggressive training protocol, and that entire team basically dropped out because they didn't want to continue with the study because it was hindering their play. And then, as we mentioned here, the severity, there was no significant difference in severity comparing the interventions to baseline and the hamstring lowers to control, so wasn't of note for us in that study. Brooks et al. Also looked at hamstring lowers, and again, the Pedro score was 5 and the Oxford score was 4 in another prospective cohort study, again, a fairly low quality study. And again, they looked at primary and secondary prevention because some of the players had incurred previous hamstring strains and they weren't able to isolate for that. Their population here was elite male rugby players in the English Premiership League, and they had a fairly high pool of participants there at 546. Their interventions they defined as strengthening. Unfortunately, in the article and in an attempt to contact them to find out what strengthening was, it was just listed as regular concentric and eccentric strengthening. And the stretching was just listed as static stretching. And again, no details about the actual protocol that they involved. Their hamstring lowers, like the picture shown before in group C here, was combined with the stretching, strengthening, and to see the effect here. So like Arneson, they looked at the incidence as being the number of strains per 1,000 player hours, and their severity was the number of days lost per injury. The incidence here they found was that the hamstring lowers was at significantly lower risk of having a hamstring strain than the strengthening group, and that they were also at a lower risk of having a hamstring strain compared to the strengthening and stretching group. And again, no significant difference across the groups with regard to severity. The last study here that looked at hamstring lowers was a bit higher quality, although it was a fairly poorly designed RCT, which got a score of 2B on the Oxford scale and a Pedro score of 7. And again, looking at primary and secondary prevention. They did competitive male football players in Australia, and their interventions were the hamstring lowers, as described, and the stretching and range of motion acted as their control group. And their major outcome here was the incidence, which they defined as just the pure number of hamstring strains, not per player hours. They found that the hamstring lowers group was not at a decreased risk of sustaining a hamstring strain when they did their intention to treat analysis. And this was based on the fact that they had a significantly higher dropout rate than I'm sure they anticipated. Actually, only 47% of the participants in the study even completed 40% of the training sessions, and they had a massive dropout after just the first training session. When they looked at things in terms of the number of player, when they looked at them for players that had completed at least 2 training sessions, they did find that there was a protective effect. As you can see here, only 4% of the hamstring lowers group had a strain compared to 13.2 in the stretching and strengthening group. But the significance of their dropouts is something that we'll discuss in the discussion, but one of the consequences of this was the result of using a different protocol that was quite aggressive. They used a protocol that had the players doing 12 reps of 6 repetitions of the hamstring lowers, which didn't seem to coincide with another study that was used by a research that came out of Sweden that was much more progressive and didn't have that effect, was used in the Arneson study. So Amanda will give you the isokinetic centric strengthening.
Right, so I'm going to look at 2 studies that examine the effect of eccentric exercise using isokinetic strengthening protocols. As you can see by the picture, and I'm sure most of us have seen an isokinetic dynamometer, but subjects are strapped in and stabilized at the thighs, waist, and chest, and then resistance is monitored so that the velocity is held constant. So the first study that used an isokinetic protocol was by Croisier et al. It was a cohort study, Oxford level 4 and Pedro level 2, so again, quite low level. It looked at secondary prevention only, so all 26 elite male athletes had a previous hamstring strain, and it was a unilateral strain, so one side only. The intervention included individualized rehab programs on a Kintrex 500 dynamometer. Um, As far as outcomes, incidence again was the main outcome measure, and at a 12-month follow-up period, none of the 26 subjects had a recurrent hamstring strain. Pain on a 10-point visual analog scale was also monitored over the course of the intervention. And over the course of the intervention, it was significantly decreased from 5.9 to 0.9, and this remained constant for 12 months. A second study using an isokinetic protocol was by Quiros da Silva, quite similar to the one above, level 4 on the Oxford scale and a level 2 Pedro. It also examines secondary prevention only, and so again, all 8 of the male athletes in the study had had a previous hamstring strain. The intervention in this case involved a rehab program involving eccentric exercise on a Cybex isokinetic dynamometer and what they labeled classical kinesiotherapy. This article was quite obviously translated from another language, and they used quite a bit of terminology that was we weren't quite sure of, but they describe classical kinesiotherapy as cryotherapy, physiotherapy, the use of NSAIDs, deep transverse friction massage, passive stretching, manual eccentric exercises, and proprioceptive exercises. Again, in this study, there was no recurrent hamstring strains at the 8-month follow-up, and as this was the main outcome. And then, looking at the effect of eccentric exercises using two other strengthening interventions. The top picture there is a yo-yo flywheel ergometer. And the way that this one works is that the flywheel is set into a rotational motion by a concentric action of the hamstring muscles. And then it's decelerated using an eccentric action of the hamstring muscles. The eccentric action is performed over a small angular displacement and therefore at a high muscle torque. And this is what causes the eccentric overload. The second picture there is a picture of standing foot catches, which was used in one of the studies. The way this works is that the subjects stood parallel to the wall so they could use that for balance, and then they would simulate the swing phase of running. They would perform a quick quadriceps contraction and then attempt to catch or slow down the leg and stop it before reaching full knee extension using eccentric hamstring contraction. So the first study which used the yo-yo flywheel ergometer was by Askling et al. It was a level 2B randomized controlled trial and one of our higher level studies that were included, although it still wasn't that high. It received a Pedro level of 6. It looked at primary and secondary prevention in elite male soccer players in Sweden. And the intervention involved a preseason training program that was either, the subjects were in two groups, and so this was all preseason. They used the general training, and yo-yo flywheel ergometer was the trained group, and the control group did just the general training, which was undescribed in the study. And as I have previously mentioned, the yo-yo flywheel ergometer involved a concentric and an eccentric phase. As far as results, again, it looked at hamstring strain as its primary outcome, or the incidence of hamstring strain. And in the trained group, so this was the group that used the eccentric exercise, there were 3 hamstring strains versus 10 in the control group. And this was a significant difference. That's looking at primary and secondary prevention combined. If you look at the individual, at the demographics of the two groups, there were 6 participants in the train group who had had a previous hamstring injury, and only four in the control group who had had a previous hamstring injury. And then, to break that down a little further, two of the six players who had had a previous injury in the train group had or sustained a recurrent strain, and all four of the controls who had had a previous injury had a strain, or had a previous strain. And the second study that used the standing foot catches was a level 2B RCT by Sherry and Best, which received a Pedro level or a Pedro score of 7. It looked at secondary prevention only, and it was the only subject to include female athletes along with male athletes. The subjects in this study were divided into two groups. The first one was the stretching and strengthening group, which did perform static stretching, icing, and progressive resistance exercises, including the standing foot catches. And the second group was the progressive agility and trunk stability group. And this group did exactly that along with icing. For the results of the study, incidence was again defined as number of hamstring strains. And in this study, the PATS group, which was the progressive agility and trunk stability, had zero incidence of hamstring strain, as opposed to the stretching and strengthening group that had the eccentric intervention. They had 6 strains at 16 days after return to sport. And then at a 12-month follow-up period, one more subject in each study had sustained a hamstring strain. So this study was the only one that actually showed more strains in the eccentric group. So a quick summary of the results of the 7 studies. We had our 3 hamstring lowers studies, all looking at primary and secondary prevention. And in all cases, under the incidence, the arrow pointing down means that the incidence in the hamstring strain in the eccentric group was lower than in the other intervention groups. And as far as severity, eccentric didn't seem to have a difference in the 2 studies that reported it. For the isokinetic strengthening, the 2 studies both looked at secondary prevention only, and neither of them had any recurrent hamstring strains. Looking at the other strengthening, we had the Askling, which looked at the yo-yo, or used the yo-yo flywheel ergometer, and Sherry and Best, which used the foot catches. Askling looked at primary and secondary, and the eccentric had a lower incidence of strain than the other intervention groups. And Sherry and Best actually had a higher incidence of hamstring strain in the eccentric group. And they looked at secondary prevention only. So now I'm going to turn it over to Osita for the discussion.
So as Amanda just nicely summarized for us, there were 7 studies that were included in our review. 4 were prospective cohort studies and 3 were RCTs. Overall, the studies were pretty low in their levels of evidence, ranging from 2B to 4 on the Oxford level scales. The included studies, however, did show an overall positive trend towards a protective effect of eccentric training in the primary and secondary prevention of hamstring strains. However, due to the low level of evidence of our included studies, we were unable to identify an apparent relationship between study outcomes and the methodological quality or type of eccentric intervention used in the included studies and their outcomes. These apparent limitations also hinder our ability to make any generalizations or recommendations with respect to the effectiveness of eccentric exercise in the prevention of hamstring muscle strains. So although our review provides a summary of a small number of low-level studies, and as I just mentioned, it limits its generalizability. So although the inherent limitations of the primary study, however, necessitates that their findings are interpreted with caution, the poor methodological design of the included studies may have reduced their power to detect any sized effects. For example, a lack of therapist blinding, unclear randomization, and small sample size may have reduced the power of the included studies. In both the isokinetic and other strengthening studies, there were small sample size, and this may have potentiated or reduced the likelihood of observing any significant effects of eccentric exercise on the prevention hamstring strains. And as we all know, small sample sizes increase the likelihood of producing a type 2 error in which you accept the null hypothesis when you shouldn't have. So another limitation of the included studies, and that was apparent as we were going through them, was that there was no clear definition or no clear technique used to diagnose hamstring strains. Sports clinicians, including physiotherapists and other trained medical personnel, completed the assessment and diagnosis of hamstring strains in the included studies. However, the methodology used varied. Criteria for diagnosis included, but were not limited to, tenderness on palpation, pain with isometric contraction, a mechanism of injury that resulted in sudden posterior thigh pain, limitation of activity, and pain with stretching. And although research supports that clinical assessments are appropriate when diagnosing hamstring strains, we propose that more research needs to be identified to support which clinical qualifications and techniques are more effective when diagnosing hamstring strains. So as mentioned previously and highlighted when we went over the components of all the included studies, the type of eccentric intervention described in the studies all varied by type and prescription. For example, in the isokinetic strength studies, both Quasi and Queiroz de Silva coupled their eccentric protocols with other treatments, such as electrical nerve stimulation, kinesiotherapy, or other sport-specific activities. By not having the eccentric training in isolation, it is unclear exactly how much protection against recurrent hamstring strains was due to the isokinetic eccentric strengthening and how much was due to the other factors or combination of factors. Sherry and Best, who used the foot catches, also used interventions which incorporated multiple training modes. Although they showed that a rehabilitation program consisting of progressive agility and trunk stabilization was significantly more effective than the hamstring stretching and strengthening group, the standing foot catches were used to eccentrically load the hamstring muscles in the STST group. However, the use of agility training, which involves considerable eccentric loading through stopping and starting, was not identified as a specific eccentric intervention in the PATS group. This confounding factor may have also explained why the PATS group sustained fewer hamstring strains. As was mentioned in the previous reviews, a lack of consistent operational definitions of terms further hindered our ability to compare the results of all of our included studies, specifically when it came to the incidence of hamstring strains as well as severity. Hamstring strain incidence was described either in terms of the number of events or number of event per player hours, and severity was described in terms of number of days lost to injury or subjective pain ratings on visual analog scales. So the generalizability of these findings to other populations is limited also due to the fact that the majority of the studies involve competitive male athletes. Research suggests that elite athletes may be at greater risk for hamstring strains since they try at a higher intensity and frequency than recreational counterparts. The protective effect of eccentric training in elite athletes may be more remarkable since these athletes are typically closer to a theoretical ceiling effect for eccentric straight gains. Given these findings, eccentric training protocols may have to be modified to address these differences in level of play. Of our 7 studies, only 1 included female participants, and research has shown that there are sex differences in the inflammatory markers, muscle torque, and delayed onset muscle soreness following eccentric exercise. These findings suggest that male and female muscles may respond differently to eccentric training. Therefore, the results from studies using only male participants should be extrapolated with caution to females. DOMS and dropouts were consistently seen in the eccentric training protocols, specifically those that use the flywheel ergometer and the hamstring lowers. DOMS, as we all know, is characterized by muscle soreness, stiffness, inflammation, loss of function, peaking 1 to 3 days after unaccustomed exercise. Specifically in the Gabby et al. Study that Andrew described previously, less than half of the participants completed the required training sessions, and DOMS was cited as the primary reason for non-compliance. DOMS was also reported as the primary reason for non-compliance in the Arneson trial for one team. However, as Andrew mentioned, the team did not follow the prescription as prescribed. Differences in the amount of DOMS reported in the two hamstring lowers trials may be attributed also to the differences in the protocols used by the investigators. One used a protocol by Brockett, which is much more aggressive than the progressive nature of the Mjolson protocol that was used in the Arneson study. So a lack of compliance to eccentric training protocols and subsequent adverse effects may limit the implementation of these protocols in clinical settings, and we believe that future studies are needed to determine the type and volume of eccentric training that is necessary to exert a protective effect on hamstring strains while minimizing the occurrence of adverse effects. So now for our ideas with respect to future research. So as we highlighted throughout the presentation, the studies we included varied extensively in their methodological rigor, population, sample size, and most notably the type of eccentric intervention. We believe that additional high-level research involving larger sample sizes are required to determine the effectiveness of eccentric training on the prevention of hamstring strains. These studies should incorporate better controls to ensure that eccentric strengthening is in isolation and that confounding factors like concurrent training will not influence the desired study outcomes. Particularly since most of the studies tend to be done in athletes, it's pretty hard to know whether or not the effect of the training has been confounded by what other training events they're doing within the season or outside of their normal training. So in addition to more well-designed research trials, the effectiveness of eccentric exercise and the prevention of hamstring strain should address the following topics. So not only should there be comparisons between the different eccentric protocols, so namely the hamstring lowers, isokinetic, flywheel ergometer, standing foot catches, to determine if one intervention is more effective in the prevention of hamstring strains. Intervention or comparison should also be done with amongst the different protocols, so specifically, for example, in the hamstring lowers where there are the two different protocols. There should be more investigation to determine which training prescription is more effective than the other and which will result in less occurrence of adverse effects and which one participants are more likely to adhere and comply to. So as mentioned previously, investigations into the effectiveness of eccentric training on increasing levels of play should also be studied to elucidate whether the protective effect of hamstring strains varies among recreational and competitive athletes. Finally, sex responses to eccentric exercise have been evaluated via cellular studies and subjective reports. However, further investigations should determine whether differences in the incidence of hamstring strains in well-designed clinical studies will vary amongst males and females. So, in conclusion, seven studies were included in our review after a comprehensive appraisal of the available literature. These studies advocate for the use of eccentric exercise to in the prevention of hamstring strains. However, due to their lack of methodological sound, the lack of methodologically sound trials impedes our ability to effectively generalize these findings to larger populations. The limited number of relevant articles highlights the needs for future well-designed trials to conclusively evaluate the effectiveness of eccentric exercise training in the prevention of hamstring strains. Therefore, until more evidence becomes available, we are unable to make concrete recommendations to support or counter the use of eccentric training protocols for the primary and secondary prevention of hamstring strains. And we would like, as a group, to acknowledge our professors at Dr. Darlene Redenbach, Dr. Donna McIntyre, Ms. Charlotte Beck, Dr. Angela Bush, and Dr. Susan Harris for their mentorship and guidance during the preparation of this project. And these are our references that I'm sure you guys are eager to all read. And questions? To the review papers, was it you that said that she went?
Yeah, they were more like expert reviews, so they were just kind of suggesting what they thought might be a.
They more looked at the the muscle adaptations to eccentric training, and then based on those findings, they inferred that that would have a protective effect. But they didn't look at incidence, therefore they were excluded. There are very limited studies that actually look at incidence and recurrence. It's more based on biological markers and actual clinical trials looking at whether or not a strain actually happened. So from how the muscles was react, from the muscle results, they infer that it should have a protective effect.
Paul.
I was wondering if you came across any evidence to suggest that heel catches are an effective exercise.
Trevor's not very fond of the heel catches, and that's one thing that we think is should be future research, is we don't know which one, like how effectively it's actually loading the hamstring muscles, so there needs to be actual studies into the effects, into that method of training.
It seems intuitively it would be less than just running, for instance.
Yeah.
It's not a high load.
Yeah.
Both the Pedro scales and the Oxford scales were used to rate the quality of the study, is that correct?
Yeah.
And why did you use two, and which one did you like better, and why? If you were going to do a future systematic review.
Probably only use one.
I think we found that the Pedro scale, because it laid out 11 specific questions and they graded on a score of 0 to 10, because one question wasn't counted, it was much easier to understand what they were looking for, whereas the Oxford levels of evidence, we had to do a lot of research into exactly what each level meant. So I think we thought it was easier to use the Pedro.
Were those levels of evidence versus quality or rigor, whereas the Pedro was quality or rigor?
Yeah.
Okay, so they were looking at two different
things. They're looking at two different things.
Yeah, okay, well it's good to have both. Well, thank you very much. Let's take a